Before we get into today's show, I have some urgent news to share with you. Premier Insight's financial year ends on June 30th, and it's vital we close a final funding gap of $65,000 by that date. The great news is a generous friend of the ministry has offered to match the first $10,000 given to help jumpstart giving towards this goal. But we must fully meet the $10,000 for it to be released. That's why I wanted to take a moment before we get into today's podcast to ask for your help. If you would, please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. That's premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast. Before we get into today's show, I have some urgent news to share with you. Premier Insight's financial year ends on June 30th, and it's vital we close a final funding gap of $65,000 by that date. The great news is a generous friend of the ministry has offered to match the first $10,000 given to help jumpstart giving towards this goal. But we must fully meet the $10,000 for it to be released. That's why I wanted to take a moment before we get into today's podcast to ask for your help. If you would, please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. That's premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Well, good afternoon and welcome along to Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley, your weekly dose here on Premier Christian Radio of apologetics, discussion and debate. Don't forget you can find us online and loads of past programmes there at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Very excited about today's show, the first of two programmes where I'm joined by Michael Roos and Gary Habermas. Today we're going to be debating, is atheistic naturalism coherent? I'll be introducing them both and the topic in just a moment's time. A quick reminder, if you haven't already looked out for it, that Unbelievable the Conference 2016 is going to be available on DVD. You can order your copy now from our shop at the Premier website. That's premier.org.uk/shop. Look out for that. You can also find the links there from the Unbelievable webpage where you can find links to this programme, lots of past programmes, the podcast, more features, our special event happening in America, Unbelievable Live, Saturday the 27th of August, and much more besides. All available from premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. I'll be giving you more details about some of those things later on in today's programme. We'll be hearing some of your feedback as well. Right now, time to get into today's show.
You're unbelievable.
Well, in the first of two programmes today, I'm joined by two eminent guests. They are Gary Habermas and Michael Roos. Gary is Professor of Apologetics and Philosophy at Liberty University, Virginia, and was actually a speaker at this year's Unbelievable the Conference. Perhaps you were there and saw his seminars on the resurrection and what to say if someone asks you whether there's any evidence for the supernatural. Well, he's in conversation on today's programme with Michael Roos. And Michael, another familiar name to many listeners. He's been on the programme several times before. A philosopher of science and professor out at Florida State University. Now, we've sort of swapped you over, gentlemen, for this one because we've got the American Gary here in the UK joining me in my studio. And on the line, the Englishman in America, Michael Roos. But it's great to have you both on. Thank you both for being with me on the programme today. Michael, the author of numerous books, including the forthcoming title, Darwinism as Religion, which he says is likely to upset some of his fellow atheists. So he might tell us a little bit about that as well as we get into today's programme. So we're asking today in the first of these two shows, is atheist naturalism coherent? Gary says, no, it's not. There are all kinds of problems with it, not least issues around free will, meaning, ethics and so on. We'll hear what Michael has to say in response to that as an atheist. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say in response to our topic today as well. Next week, we'll be hearing from both of them on whether Hume demolished miracles, which should be another interesting conversation. But for the moment, welcome along to the programme, both Gary and Michael.
Hello.
It's great to have you both with me. Hello,
hey,
Gary,
Justin.
As well. Great to have you joining me.
Glad to be with you in studio.
Studio again as well.
Yep.
Before we come to you, Michael, Gary, you've been on a lecture tour recently in the UK. Why do you uproot yourself from the comforts of Virginia and come over here to the UK every so often?
One very important reason. I love the UK. I've been coming over here since 1988, I tell my students, I say this openly, that Oxford and Cambridge are my two favorite places on the face of the earth. I mean, just one quick little incident. A few years ago, my wife and I were here, and we made a left-hand turn and started walking down the street toward Christ Church and Oxford. And, I've been there so often and seen it so much, but the so-called city of 100 medieval spires, I looked up and I went, oh, like that. And she said, come on, you've seen this before. But I love the whole UK, yeah. But I really love those two cities.
Well, there's a certain magic to Oxford and Cambridge, that's
yeah,
for
if somebody
sure.
says, why don't you come? I say, we're going to go to one of those two. Okay, I'm in.
So, well, if you want to get Gary over, that's the way to entice him. It's been great to have you in the UK recently, Gary, and we've enjoyed having your contributions again, both here on the show and at the conference. Let's introduce Michael as well. Michael, you've not got such a bad place yourself. Florida, the Sunshine State, as they say.
Yes. Well, I'm not sure whether you think being 100 in the shade is such a good place. I go out with my dogs first thing in the morning and it's very pleasant. But it's pretty hot during the day.
I can imagine it is.
Thank goodness for air conditioning, so it's not so bad. But come the winter, I spent 38 years in Canada, and oh my goodness me, come November, and I'm so glad to be down here.
Well, look, it's lovely to have you back on the programme. Earlier in the year, the last thing we did with you, Michael, was that fantastic programme where you sort of swapped positions. You played the theist, and our other guest, Randall Rouser, played the atheist, and you both sort of debated each other's sides, which was a bit of an experiment, but I thought it worked really well and was great
fun. Well,
I'm
not doing that again. I've had so many people writing to me and saying, thank you, you've brought me to Jesus. I've been trying all my life, and now I've discovered it. No more. Why don't we do something on Brexit? And maybe I can argue in favour, of leaving or something.
Well, it's a bit late for that now.
To me and say, no, we don't want to do it.
Yes. Well, anyway, it's lovely to have you back on. And yes, you're back in your atheist mode, as it were, for today's programme, of course. Michael, you've got a new book coming out, though. It sounds really interesting. Darwinism as Religion. I mean, even the title is going to upset some people, though. What's going on? Do you want to just briefly explain what this book's going to be about?
I'm a historian as well as a philosopher of science. You know, I'm from the Thomas Kuhn generation, so I switch from one to the other. And one of the things I've always been particularly interested in is with, let us call it, the death of Christianity in the 19th century, the God is Dead movement. I mean, what moved in to fill the place? And I've always felt that Darwinism, I mean, not the theory that is done in biology departments here today, but I've always felt that the sort of general Weltanschauungen, or Schauung, the overall picture, clearly moved in to become a kind of secular equivalent. And what I've been doing in this book very much is exploring this, and particularly through literature, through people like Thomas Hardy and Emily Dickinson and George Eliot and all of these things. And oh my goodness, what have I dug up? I tell you something, I used to read a lot of D.H. Lawrence as a teenager. I don't think I'd looked at him since I was 21, and now I go back to D.H. Lawrence and I'm beginning to understand why I loved him as a teenager and why I never read him thereafter, but that's another story.
Well, it is, and I'd love to maybe we can do another show once the book is actually released, because I'm sure there'll be lots of reaction both from theists and atheists to this new book. Gary, you have had a chance to have a quick look at a manuscript yourself, bit of a sneak preview. What was your reaction to reading it?
Well, Michael, one thing I'll ask you off the bat, you had made a remark, something to the effect of, to the email that was forwarded to me to say the two of us were coming on together. The email said something like, somebody's no doubt going to think you're having thoughts about conversion after your preface. So I read the preface two or three times really, really carefully, and it seemed very restrained to me. So I wondered what you thought about the preface that was going to bother some of your colleagues.
Well, I think any hint that any aspect of Darwinism might be religious is anathema to Richard Dawkins and co. I mean, let's face up to it. Your side is always saying to Dawkins and others, oh, well, you're just as religious as we are. You're just Darwinians rather than Christians. And I mean, Dawkins is, I mean, I pick on Dawkins because he's the most articulate, but he has on several occasions has vehemently denied this. And now you've got a worm in the bud, namely me, who's saying, hang on, I think, in fact, that at some level, some esoteric level, but some very fundamental level, I think that Darwinism moved in as an alternative. I mean, I would be quite happy to say that Freud and Marx have also done this sort of thing, although my personal sense is that neither of them have had the staying power of Darwinism, mainly because neither of them are true. Right. But that's another matter.
Well, it is another subject for another show, and it would be fascinating to get into that. And I look forward to it when the book is released. I think hoping for a September release, is that correct?
That's true, yes.
Great. Well, perhaps we can do that then. But you've always been, to some extent, a bit of a rebellious character in the atheist camp, Michael. You often are quoted as being somewhat sympathetic, to some positions of theism and so on. But today we're discussing whether atheist naturalism is coherent. And I suppose before we get into that, I'd love to hear you define whether A, what that is for you, and whether you are one. Anyway, you're happy to call yourself an atheist. Do you call yourself a naturalist, Michael?
Well, I think I would. I mean, these are terms which have so many different meanings, don't they? I mean, it's a bit like reduction or materialist or any of these things, atheist even, certainly Christian. I mean, if somebody says they're a Christian, they could be anything from a Roman Catholic to, pretty much a Unitarian. And, say Jehovah's Witness, where, very different sort of positions under the same umbrella. What I think I would want to say is the following, is certainly I'm a naturalist in the sense of not being a supernaturalist. In other words, whether or not there's, some entity beyond it all or something like that, I don't think that that's a figure in our domain of existence, let's put it that way. I mean, Philip Johnson, I think, quite conveniently distinguished between methodological naturalism and metaphysical naturalism. Certainly, if by methodological naturalism you mean explaining only through unbroken, unguided law, I'm absolutely, completely a methodological naturalist. I mean, a metaphysical naturalist, I take it, is at some level saying, and that's all you've got. Mm. And certainly, if you're talking about Christianity, I'm absolutely hardline metaphysical naturalist, which I equate with being an atheist. If you say, yes, but maybe, as J.B.S. Haldane used to say, the world is queerer than any of us can possibly know, I guess I'm inclined to say yes, but, at 76, I'm not spending my time hoping that the world is queerer than I know. The world is full enough for me as it is anyway. So I would take naturalist at one level to be very much a methodological strategy, which I think any scientist, including religious scientists like Theodosius Dobzhansky or Sir Ronald Fisher or the chap who's running the National Institute of Health at the moment, any of these people, I take it that in their science, they don't, that God doesn't have a role in their science, unlike, for instance, somebody like the intelligent designers or Alvin Plantinga, who want to say, yes, we can have, some kind of direct intervention.
Right.
So that at that level, I'm completely that. At the metaphysical level, yeah, I'm obviously, at some level, I'm an atheist in the sense that I don't spend my time hoping for something thereafter or something like that, nor do I take seriously, but nor do I take with any truth value the inspiration that clearly, apparently, led Tony Blair to think that going into Iraq was a, you know, something that the the divine being endorsed. So I think not only do I not believe in that, I think with Dawkins and others, I think that these are sincerely dangerous things. So for me, being a metaphysical naturalist isn't just an epistemological thing. It's also a moral thing. I think that people who believe in deities and that sort of thing not only are not grown up, but I think are dangerous.
Okay.
Morally.
That's stronger than I've heard you put it before. So that's an interesting
one. Yeah, you've just had this whacking great big report just come out, which says, you know, going into Iraq was just the most stupid thing that's ever been done. Why on earth did the man do it? And clearly he did it because at some level he thought that the, you know, the divine being was on his and George Bush's side.
Well.
And, you know, that's the kind of dangerous thing that I think we need to keep out of our lives.
Right. Well, look, let's get into this. And if we'll hear what Gary has to say in response in just a moment's time, but if you'd like to respond yourself, as ever, you can email in to the show unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can also, of course, get us on the Facebook, on the Twitter account. You can follow and comment that way at unbelievablejb for the Twitter, facebook.com/unbelievablejb if you want to follow the show on Facebook, and you can. I regularly post updates on both those social media sites as well for things that are going on. All those links available and more, links to my guests as well, of course, and past programmes from the show page. That's at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
So we're talking today on the programme about whether atheist naturalism is coherent. My two guests are Gary Habermas and Michael Roos. Gary is Professor of Apologetics and Philosophy out at Liberty University in Virginia, was a speaker at this year's Unbelievable Conference. Michael Roos, a philosopher of science and professor at Florida State University. And Michael, in that last segment there, Gary, saying that he, as far as he's concerned, yes, he's definitely a methodological naturalist. And as far as metaphysical naturalism goes, the view that all that really is, that there certainly is no supernatural entities out there, he's also pretty convinced on that. And not just from the point of view of believing that, but also seeing that it's not a helpful view, as far as he can see, in terms of the way the kind of decisions people make when they do believe in God and that kind of thing. So a couple of things to respond to there. But where do you want to start with your own views on naturalism?
Well, I think one of the issues I have is that I think a worldview needs positive and negative reinforcement, whatever kind of worldview it is. We need reasons why we're not somewhere else. We need reasons against views that would attack our views. But we also need positive reasons for our worldviews, for our belief systems. And I wonder, Michael, what you would see is positive evidence that establishes the truth value of naturalism, or if you prefer to address it, how you could be sure that there's no God in the universe, for example. I mean, how would you evidence naturalism?
Well, obviously, first of all, I don't want to go on just one incident or something like that.
Sure.
I think it's a general picture. And my personal feeling, and I speak now as a historian of science rather than so much just a philosopher, is that what we've seen, particularly since the scientific revolution, an increasing, what should we say, encroachment of science into all areas like, say, medicine and those sorts of things. Whereas 400 or 500 years ago, people would have said things like rashes or cholera were, you know, things that the deity was punishing people for. You know, the fact that the Irish all got cholera in New York City in the 1840s, people said, well, of course, what do you expect, they're Catholics? Well, I don't think that that kind of argument holds any water now, because I see science having come in and said, no, it's not prejudice, it's just bad science. And that's why, for instance, I don't think that Hitler's views on Jews holds anymore. We just know it, you know, there's no scientific evidence for it. So on the one hand, I certainly want to say I see science in a very positive way as having pushed in that sort of way. Of course, the other side to it is, and you're not going to be surprised at this, at a negative level, I personally see religion as not coherent in some sort of sense. Now, of course, the question is, which religion are we talking about? And if we're talking about Buddhism, I'm going to have different arguments than if we're talking, let us say, about Roman Catholicism. But as far as Christianity is concerned, I mean, I've certainly got major problems with issues like the problem of evil. But at a more fundamental level, and this came up, and I think we may have talked about this, Justin, when we were talking about my book on atheism, What Everybody Needs to Know. Mm. What I think struck me was that I see Christianity as cobbled together from Jewish thought and Greek thought. And basically, I just don't think that the two hold together, the whole idea of God. I mean, the Greek idea of God is based very much on the Platonic notion of the good, something which is eternal, unchanging, outside time and space, you know, that sort of thing. And then you've got the Jewish notion of a God who is very much a person, who is somebody who, you know, when he was cheesed off, flooded the earth, for instance. And you're very much a person. And I personally think that you've got this fundamental contradiction at the heart of Christianity. And so on the one hand, I've got my Catholic friends saying, yes, we accept the, you know, the Augustinian notion of God that we find in the confessions. And then you've got someone like Swinburne or Plantinga saying, if there's anything central to Christianity, it is that God is a person, that God wept at the death of Anne Frank. Whereas, of course, as you know full well, the Catholic position is that God doesn't feel angst of that nature. I mean, Anselm is quite open about that. Well, God doesn't have that. So it's nothing personal about this. I just think that Christianity is, at some very fundamental level, incoherent in its center.
Okay. That's a good start. I mean, what you've got there then, Gary, is both that science has encroached on the area where people once perhaps used religion, God as an explanation. And secondly, religion itself he doesn't find particularly coherent.
Right. Well, I wonder where the stopping point is. I mean, let me give you an example. In the history of science, we have these examples of science making great inroads, and an eclipse used to be called God's judgment on Earth, and now we know astrophysical results of eclipses and so on. But how would we conclude from something like, oh, we're making more sense solving diseases, or not every mental illness is, demon possession? As we make scientific progress, how do we stop and say, see, this is naturalism? What I mean is, science can be very successful. Of course, many, many, many of the early scientists were Christians. But apart from that, we have a lot of successes in science. But how do we jump from their successes in science, therefore naturalism is true? I mean, it could be any number of other stopping points. It could be different varieties of Christianity. It could be interventionist or non-interventionist views. It could be, well, you name several kinds of Christianity yourself, Michael. It could be any of those. It could be a different religion. I mean, I guess my one question here is, how do we jump from scientific success to therefore no God and naturalism when there are an abundant number of views in between that the scientific framework could be supporting?
No, not supportive. Could be consistent with, I would be more inclined to say.
Okay.
I think it's perfectly consistent to say that little green men might land on the road, you know, I-10, on my way to Jacksonville to visit my daughter, and I could get killed. I mean, it's perfectly consistent with what I know. Whether it's reasonable for me then to say to my daughter, I'm not coming over this weekend because it's possible that little green men might come. I just don't. I mean, obviously, all of these things have an element, what do we call it, a pragmatism. I mean, what you're doing is you're playing on the problem of induction. We know perfectly well that we cannot get a universal from particulars. So what I'm saying is that being a naturalist about science is part of the methodology that we have to use all of the time. The question is, what is it reasonable to believe? Mm. I don't think it's reasonable to believe in little, or to worry about little green men on I-10 anymore. I think it's reasonable to worry about Joseph Smith and his golden plates, or if you like, Jesus rising from the dead.
Hmm. Wow.
Well, to go back to my point, though, so on the one hand, let's just concede successes of science. Let's say all modern persons today see great successes in science, and that's wonderful. But how is that an evidence? My original question was, what are positive evidences to conclude that naturalism is true? How would we go from scientific successes, some of which are Christian, from Christian scientists, but whatever, how do we go from scientific successes to therefore naturalism is true? I'm still looking for positive reasons for naturalism.
Playing games here.
Well, what do you? I mean, what are you saying? Are you saying
in the sense that on the one hand you're asking me to make a leap which you know perfectly well I cannot make? I mean, this is the problem of induction. I can't go from particulars to generalities. So I cannot go from the methodology of science works to therefore necessarily it works. I can't do that. I mean, so we know that. As I said, I cannot rule out little green men, or if you like, Jesus suddenly appearing on I-10 and saying, you know, stop or something like that. I can't do that.
But how would you get all the way to there's no God, which seems to me a pretty radical view from science works.
My argument is a twofold one anyhow.
Right.
Because as I've said, I find the notion of God incoherent. The fact that I can't prove something doesn't mean to say I'm going to believe in triangles which add up to more than 180 degrees or something like that. So, I mean, I've got that one. But the point is, the question at this level of the argument, the question is, is there any reason for me to take seriously the notion of God? And as I say, at one level, it's bound to be a pragmatic argument. I mean, why don't you folks worry that as you're sitting there right now, you know, little green men are going to manifest themselves and beat the hell out of you? I mean, you know, logically, that could certainly happen. That could happen. But I don't think you and Justin are sitting there, as it were, looking at each other, trembling, just in case something is going to happen. As you might, for instance, if you were in Nazi Germany and you were Jews and you suddenly heard banging on the door and said, you know, this is the SS, open up.
Yeah.
I mean, then you'd have very good reason to be scared. You're not scared. Why aren't you scared? Because, you know, inductive experience has taught you that it's just not reasonable to believe in this. And so this is where I stand on the God thing. I don't see the positive reason from science. As I say, I can't logically rule it out. But as I say, I've got other arguments which lead me to do that. The point about science is I don't think science leads me to believe in the existence of a God. I have no need of that hypothesis.
Well, let's take a quick break there. We'll come back in a short moment's time, and I'd be interested to hear from Gary where the questions are leading in that sense, Gary, because I think that's what we need to hear from you next, is why you don't believe you can make that leap, and I think Michael said you can't, but as far as he's concerned, it's about my best conclusions from what I have in front of me, as it were. We'll come back again. We're asking today on the programme, Gary Habermas and Michael Roos joining me, Justin Brierley, for Unbelievable. We're asking, is atheist naturalism coherent? And perhaps we'll start to hear from Gary in the next section of the programme some of the reasons why he doesn't feel it's a valid way of looking at life and reality. So come back again in a short moment's time as we continue today's programme. Meet the mission field on your doorstep in the latest edition of Premier Christianity magazine. From happy moral pagans and hipsters to alpha males and atheist memers, we'll introduce you to the new tribes who need to hear the gospel in the UK today. Plus, read our in-depth interview with the UK's former chief rabbi Jonathan Sacks, the ethics of boxing and mixed martial arts ahead of this summer's Olympics, post-Brexit news analysis, and practical ways to connect with God in your 9-to-5 job. All that plus news, reviews, and your favourite columnists. Subscribe today or request a free sample copy at premierchristianity.com/freesample.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to today's programme. I'm Justin Brierley, and today on the show, which gets Christians and non-Christians talking, we're asking, is atheist naturalism coherent? Two guests joining me, Gary Habermas and Michael Roos. Now, don't forget, you can send your thoughts in as well. We'd be delighted to hear from you. unbelievable@premier.org.uk if you want to email me. We'll be hearing some of your thoughts towards the end of today's programme about recent shows. And don't forget, you can also find us online at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. You can find past episodes, videos, articles, features, and of course the podcast there. Hundreds of thousands of people listen to the podcast every year, so it would be great if you could let a friend know about it if you enjoy these kinds of discussions. We were talking in that last... Well, yes, it is, in fact. We had over 1.5 million downloads of the show last year, Michael, believe it or not. Yes, it's... People enjoy these discussions, believe it or not. It would be great to kind of pick up from where we were, Gary. Essentially, you were pressing Michael to say, where do you make the leap from the successes of science to the belief that there is no God to naturalism? And Michael said, stop playing games, Gary. You know that I can't do that. But what I'm doing is I'm acting on the best information I have. I don't sort of spend my time worrying about little green men, and I'm not going to spend my time worrying about God unless I guess I have really positive evidence that it's something to worry about.
Right. And I don't think of myself as playing games. I will tell you this, Michael. If we lived next door to each other, we'd be good friends. I'm a really easygoing guy, and I'm not trying to be mean or pushy or whatever, but I'm really trying to understand atheism. I really am. And I wonder how... Let me just concede that science, even natural methodologically practiced science, has made fantastic gains in recent decades or more. And I would also concede, of course, being a Christian, I'm not going to concede that all forms of Christianity are incoherent, but I think there's a lot of incoherent religion out there. But I wonder... unless we know all religion is coherent, or unless we know the only option for modern science is to say it's a success of naturalism, if there's a long, long way from science is successful to therefore no God exists, there's any number of people who would step into the gap and say, oh, that's my belief system that gives rise to science. I mean, you've got a few people out there right now who are championing a new kind of Platonism as being better than some of the older Darwinian methods, and they're naturalists as far as I know. So there's a lot of stepping points, but how would an atheistic form of naturalism be... how can we say, well, that's my reason for being atheistic, because science is successful and religion is incoherent? I don't think it follows from those two points that therefore atheism is true.
Are you saying that Michael should, strictly speaking, be an agnostic?
Well, that would be a good start. I would think agnosticism would fit the bill better, but... with some of the other issues, I mean, if we got talking about morality or the freedom of choice or the existence of persons, I find all kinds of issues with agnosticism, but we haven't gotten into that, and that's fine. I'm just saying, if we admit that, I'll go with you on a lot of religion is incoherent, and I'll go with you on the modern successes of science. I don't see naturalism as... I don't see those as being two arguments for naturalism. They could be arguments for any number of belief systems.
Well, as I say, I think you're trying... I mean, yeah, I think that what you're trying to do, and you're a pretty skilled debater, is push me into a false position. I mean, that's the name of the game. I mean, as I say, I don't look upon the success of science as such as refuting religion. I mean, as I say, you know, part of the problem is, what does one mean by religion? I mean, does one mean, for instance, I don't think anything could refute Unitarianism because, you know, it's such a flabby belief system that, you know, anything you
You're right. You're right.
Would be compatible with that. I've got a lot of good friends who are Unitarians who hope part of the 100,000 listening to me on that one. So the point I'm making is I could well see going into the world and looking at the world and coming at the end of it and saying, you know, the only way I can explain what I'm seeing, things like the design of the, let's say, you know, the flea or something like that, or the tick, that's something that we suffer from around here. But, you know, it's an incredible, as Aristotle said, don't knock it because it's awful. It's beautiful in itself, and I agree. Now, I could well understand somebody going into the world, the physical world, and looking at it, and at the end of the day or the end of their career or whatever it is, saying, you know, the only way I can make sense of this is by invoking some kind of a deity or something like that. And I hate to agree with Richard Dawkins, but I think he's got a good point when he says only after Darwin was it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. And I think if you look, let us say, at Kant in the Third Critique, struggling with these issues, then I think it would be, frankly, at least reasonable to say my evidence of looking at things scientifically leads me to conclude, not necessarily that Christianity as such is true, but that there's something which is true out there. Now, basically, I want to say that the way that science has gone and the way that science goes today suggests that there's no reason to do this. I mean, I think there are aspects of it which, like Haldane said, the world is a hell of a lot more peculiar than we think it is. I think quantum mechanics, if nothing else, and, you know, hidden variables and those sort of things suggest that it's a... And consciousness suggests it's a hell of a lot stranger than folks like me know. But I've got no reason to think that invoking a deity or anything like that is going to help. Now, as I say, at one level, this is very much this is not a positive argument against the existence of God. It's an argument which says, I don't see that empirical science compels me to believe in a God or something. Whereas I'm quite happy to say before 1859, you know, it wouldn't be at all unreasonable. I mean, David Hume, you know, was caught on this. But so that's my one side. As I say, my other side is, when it comes to, you know, let's take the religions one by one. I mean, you know, why don't I believe in the Mormons? Well, you know, because I don't think that Joseph Smith it was reliable. Why don't I believe in Catholicism? Well, I've given you some of my arguments there. Why don't I believe in Buddhism? Well, because I have trouble with the transmigration of souls. And so on and so forth. I'll knock them down as we go along. So my argument is two ways. So don't try to pin me down and say, well, you know, everything goes on the science.
No, I'm not trying to I think you used the phrase push you to a false position. No, as far as I'm concerned, I'm asking you for reasons for the position you identified as your own. So rather than pushing you somewhere you don't want to go, I'm saying...
I'm not giving you my reasons. I'm saying that, you know, what is it? Weinberg says, the more I study the world, the less meaning it seems to have. Well, at some level, I mean, I've criticized that taken out of context. But,
right.
I mean, at some level, I'm inclined to agree with that.
I
don't see that empirical science in any sense compels me to believe in the existence of God. And as I say, it's more than that. I mean, whether you like inductive arguments or not, at least there's a pragmatic
level. Should you be an atheist, though, Michael? Because it doesn't compel you to believe in God, but it doesn't compel you to not believe in God.
As I've said, Justin, we've had this one out before. I mean, it depends what you mean by being an atheist. Does it mean, if being an atheist means thinking that Jehovah's Witnesses are totally, completely wrong, yes, I'm an atheist. If being an atheist means that the 39 articles don't work, yes, I'm an atheist. If transmigration of souls, yes, I'm an atheist. So, as it were, obviously, I'm quite proud to be, I'm committed to being an atheist right down the line on all of these. But if you keep going at me and saying, yes, but maybe there's something, you know, some meaning that we don't know. Well, how can I say that there isn't?
I'm not holding
my breath.
Yeah, you're not holding your breath, but at some level, I guess you have to be agnostic. You know, it's possible.
Yes, but agnostic in the sense that I think that there may be a deeper meaning to the world, but whether it's a deeper meaning that I would want to identify with a deity
or a supernatural
is another matter entirely.
Of course, okay.
Suppose there's some kind of deeper meaning in the sense of some kind of physics, as it were, or something like that, that makes the whole thing hang together. Whether or not one wants to speak of this physics, if you like, as a deity, I think is another matter entirely.
Okay.
Deities, for me, are things that you worship, things that you say, thank you, God, for making my life possible. Thank you, God, for giving me, you know, these children that I can be so happy with. Mm. Even thank you, God, for giving me trials, which I think have made me a better and stronger person. I mean, that's, for me, is what a deity is all about.
Yes, well, indeed, and I'm sure Gary would agree to some extent.
Aristotle's unmoved mover, who doesn't even know of our existence.
Well,
I've got no reason to think that there's even that.
I'd like to hear from Gary for a little bit, Gary, just to get a sense from you of where we've got to in the discussion, and why in particular you don't find atheist naturalism a compelling standpoint, some of these weaknesses you've identified?
Yeah, well, one is because, and we'll probably get into this, I don't know what to expect from the a conversation about David Hume and miracles, but maybe we can get into some of this. I think there are some very strong and very positive reasons for religion, some that are not normally paraded out, but which are strongly supported empirically. That's a bold statement, but I'm willing to make several of those. So that's one side. But on the other side, and in other words, that was my earlier statement that not all forms of religion are incoherent or stupid or, and I'm not saying you said that, Michael, but I mean a lot of people do. Dawkins does. And or evil or nasty. Not all forms are like that. I would like to think that Christianity has had a lot to do with education around the world, changing the system in India. In fact, I have a number of Hindu sources that give Christians credit for doing that in their own country. But coming back to the naturalism thing, Michael, I'm trying to remember. I'm really asking this. I'm not sure that what I'm saying is true. But it seems like I've also heard you call yourself an agnostic from time to time, that you go back and forth between – you might take a different title. I mean, you said there's no universe.
Agnostic is the word I prefer, because agnostics are usually people who couldn't give a damn. And I'm like T.H. Huxley. I'm a very religious man. It's just that I, in the total absence of theology, I think Huxley said. I think that very much sums me up. I mean, my wife isn't religious at all. My wife doesn't even know the relationship between Abraham and Isaac and doesn't care. You know, I do, and I do care. Because my life seems to have been lived as Isaac rather than Abraham.
That's good.
That's, you know, Abraham's for me a university administrator. Okay, well, that's another matter.
You said, for example, you can't get universals from particulars, and
I mean, the point is, I'm atheistic about.
Right.
I'm certainly atheistic about the religion in which I grew up. And you're right. I grew up as a Quaker. I mean, it's very hard to be, you know, anti-Quaker. I'm sure if I'd married a fellow Quaker, I might still be going to meeting, because I think what Quakers do is tremendously admirable. Even though, you know, they don't have enough theology, which makes them awful bores at times. they really do.
There's nothing to get your teeth into.
You know, sometimes Quakers are as bad as Richard Dawkins when it comes to theology.
But I mean, you would never say you could.
You know what I mean?
You would never say you could prove the non-existence of God because you can't get universals from particulars.
I do feel that I'm atheistic about these things. And the thing which hasn't quite come into this conversation quite so much is, for me, it's a moral issue as well. I don't think, I would be grown up if I became, you know, took on Jesus now because I'm scared of death. And B, I see the horrendous things, which I think good things have been done, but I see, you know, the sexual abuse of small children, that dreadful man, Cardinal Law, in Boston, for instance. I mean, that horrified.
It is.
The Iraq War. I mean, I think the Iraq War was brought on because Bush and Blair really had this messianic vision that this is what God wanted them to do, you know, to go against the Antichrist. And we see what that led
well,
to.
Well, let's allow Gary just to make some responses to some of this.
Yeah, you know what, Michael, we don't have to stay on the disproof of God and the – and I understand that. I mean, although I am reminded, I remember this statement that Bertrand Russell made that – he's not going to do anything so stupid as try to prove the non-existence of God. And I understand you saying, you know, yeah, well, we, you know, you can't go there. And I appreciate that. But what about items like you go to a restaurant. I'll just pick a real easy one for our listeners. You go to a restaurant and you look at the menu and you say, I'll take a T-bone steak or I'll take a ribeye steak, and I don't want that liver right there, and you have every sense of making free choices. I don't know if you're a determinist or not a determinist. I'm sorry, I don't know your views better. But does atheists have a problem, for example, with people having a notion that they have free will? People, your wife walks away from the table to do something, make a phone call. She comes back, and you say, yeah, I ordered steak. You go ahead and order what you want. I mean, in our everyday parlance, we have a sense that we're making free decisions. In morality, Christians would take a stance for objective ethics. I'm just guessing that a lot of atheists would not.
And in all of these examples, you mentioned personhood as well.
Personhood, the existence of persons
These are for you things that we... Most people take for granted free will, personhood.
We take for granted, but I think there's issues on all of those things with a strict naturalism.
Yeah, and for you, these are areas where you'd want to push a naturalist to explain how they marry these issues with a kind of thoroughgoing naturalism.
Yeah, and the examples I gave would be the personal notion of freedom.
Just open that up a bit for us,
sure,
so that Michael can
sure
respond to it. Because what's the problem then? Why on naturalism, atheist naturalism, is me believing I've got a free choice whether I have liver or steak at the restaurant a problem? Why on earth would that be an issue? Just because I don't believe there's a God?
Are you asking me this?
Yes, I'm asking you to explain that and so that Michael can...
Well, it depends. If Michael says, well, I'm not a determinist, so that's how I explain free will. I mean, Michael, you may know Tony Flew was a very, very good friend of mine for 25 years. And long before he became a theist in 2004, he told me that he gave up determinism. He was a determinist for a good part of his career. But he told me he gave up determinism in the 1980s. Now, I don't know
just,
where
just
you...
Just for listeners who aren't aware of what determinism exactly is, do you want to just quickly define it and why many atheists would class themselves as determinists?
It should be a question for Michael, it's, you know, because they're his people. But I mean, what I mean is a lot of atheists seem to believe that the world is determined, so we are not really free. We do not make free choices per se. We may think we're making free choices, but the world is determined and things are going to happen a certain way whether we think we're making choices
because
or not.
Because the world just consists of ultimately physical laws.
Physical laws, atoms are going to move a certain way, and you might think they're moving another way. In fact, you might even call the waiter back and say, I take that back. I don't want steak. I want chicken. And you have a sense that you're going to change again, but of course, if you're a determinist, it was already preset and you can't move it anyway.
Right. So just firstly, Michael, where do you stand on this issue of free will and determinism?
Well, first of all, I stand on liver rather than steak. That does show that I'm English, doesn't it? But whenever I go to England, one of the great things is that I can get liver.
That's great. That's a great comeback.
So that's the first thing, obviously. But, you know, you read your David Hume. You know what I'm going to say is I'm a compatibilist. I believe in determinism. I believe in free will. I mean, Hume doesn't want to deny free will. He wants to give an explanation of it. And, of course, We determinists say that without some notion of determinism, it's very difficult to see how you could have free will. I mean, if, for instance, Justin walked outside into the, you know, let's say walked down the Strand and threw off all his clothes and, and said, I'm Jesus Christ incarnate.
Which I'm planning on doing later on this afternoon.
If he said, oh, well, I've got free will, I've just stepped outside, you know, the causal chain, I suspect he'd be off to Bedlam or wherever it is, pretty sharpish. I mean, the point is, why do we inculcate moral training with our children? Is because we hope that there's going to be some causal effect. I mean, when we see somebody behave appallingly, one of the first things we say is, well, obviously they weren't properly brought up. So the whole point about laws and determinism and freedom is a lot more complex than simply, oh, well, if you've got determinism, you can't have free will. Because I would want to say that at some level, the person who, as it were, chooses whether they're going to do something is free in a way that somebody who's just, you know, a function of, what shall we say, quantum mechanics. I mean, that's not freedom. I mean, if Justin strips himself stark naked because one of his electrons went one way rather than the other, I don't say he's free. I say he's crazy. Mm. On the other hand, if Justin, you know, I find that on Saturdays he goes and works with children because his parents inculcated in him, you know, this obligation to serve others, and the only way you can be truly happy is by serving others. I don't say that, oh, well, he was just indoctrinated, he didn't do this freely, he doesn't deserve any moral credit. So the whole point I would want to argue is that we do have both freedom within the context of being determined. The analogy I like, and God forbid that I would quote Dan Dennett here, but I thought that he was very good on this. I mean, shooting off simple rockets, they're, you know, determined, they don't have it. But Mars rover comes to a rock, and it doesn't, you know, give up. It doesn't just keep going. It stops and, as it were, evaluates, you know, should I go over the rock? Should I go round it? Should I give up and go home? Now, it's all, as we know, it's all law-governed. It's all law-governed. But I think it's got a dimension of freedom that a rocket just set, you know, fired off and, you know, can't do anything. Once, if the target moves, then the rocket's useless. Doesn't have that dimension.
Okay,
so,
well,
as I say, I personally, and I'm being very orthodox Humean here, is I want to say that free will presupposes determinism, or at least law-bound in some sense, rather than, so they're not, you know, contradictory.
Okay, well, we've got into this now, so what do you want to say in response to that, Gary?
Put my clothes back on again, Justin, okay?
I will put my clothes back on, yes. I'll resist the temptation to take them off, at least, not until Gary's left the studio. Anyway, Gary.
Well, you've got windows here.
We have. It's a bit exposed, to be honest. Okay, carry on anyway, Gary.
Well, you know, this is a silly, I admit this is a very silly comeback, but it would almost be like back to our restaurant and we're saying steak, chicken, or liver. It would almost be like we wouldn't have to order because what's going to happen is going to happen anyway. I mean, I can't change it in any metaphysical deep sense, so I may as well let whatever happens, happens.
I think that's fatalism, not... That's not determinism.
That's a good point. I'm none of the above. I'm not a determinist. I'm not a fatalist. But
you know, Mars rover coming up and saying, you know, it wouldn't use the F word, but it, you know, it's rather like Mars rover coming up to the rock and saying, oh, F it, you know, nothing I can do, and I just as well sit on my bum until my batteries run down. That's fatalism.
So you don't have an issue with your brand of atheism, you don't have an issue explaining any of the following: free will, absolute right, objective right and wrong, the nature of persons.
Is even if I'm a libertarian, and you know what I mean by...
I sure do. I'm libertarian.
We're not using it in the Ayn Rand sense. We're using it in the Kantian.
You're right.
That at some level, freedom is outside the... I still don't see any reason for God.
Oh, no, I wasn't going there. I was talking more about the original.
Or even non-naturalism at this point.
I was talking about the original question on the coherence of atheism. If you think atheism struggles at all with issues like free will, the existence of morality, the nature of persons, or that all subjective states have to have physical causation, I would think that those are all issues where what most people tend to believe about themselves and their decisions and their own beings and so on and their families seem to be opposed to the deepest metaphysical notions of most forms of philosophical naturalism.
Yeah, well, as I say, I mean, I think, I've written on morality. I think I can speak to that one.
Sure.
I'm not going to deny, I think the biggest problem we've got is sentience, if you like.
Okay, good.
I don't think we've got an explanation.
That's great.
For why molecules can think. I really don't think we've got that. I mean, funnily enough, I'm almost, inclined these days to be a panpsychic monist and to think, except I don't want to be like the Prince of Wales and think that plants, I should talk to my plants. But
so,
I don't see that God necessarily comes.
Well, I'm not trying to bring God in from any
God
of these.
Hypothesis helps at all on this.
I'm not asking about the God hypothesis. I'm asking about the coherence of atheism. So, if you said panpsychism, or I'm thinking epiphenomenalism, if you're thinking about those notions, you might, in a sense, be saying. It's a little difficult, which I think you just said a moment ago. It's a little bit difficult to say that all subjective states are caused by physical processes. I think that's kind of rough.
I mean, physical process, natural. I've been very careful not to say I'm a physicalist or a materialist.
Right, that's wise.
This is why I don't want, I mean, all electrons. Physical or electrons material? I don't know. I'm trying to think not. Aren't electrons natural? Yes, I'm perfectly, as opposed to supernatural, I'm perfectly happy to say that. It's the same with consciousness. I don't think consciousness is, just something physical, something material. Of course, I really don't. But I do think it's something natural.
Well, let's take a quick break there, and we'll go to our final part of today's discussion in just a moment's time. My guests on Unbelievable, having a really good natter today, Gary Habermas and Michael Roos, on this question we've been circling of whether atheist naturalism is coherent. Gary says no, as far as he can see, it's not. Michael's saying, well, yes, there are some mysteries there, but I'm not prepared to throw my hat in with the God hypothesis at the same time. So we're going to come back to this final bit of discussion before we hear some of your feedback a little later on in the programme. So do stick with us here on Unbelievable, the show that aims to get you thinking every Saturday afternoon. Welcome back to Unbelievable. I'm Justin Briley, and this is the programme that brings you conversations that matter every Saturday here as part of Faith Explored on Premier Christian Radio. Do check out the website for more details about my guests today, for details of past programmes, to find the podcast, and you can join the growing numbers of people who download the programme every week, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Details there of Unbelievable Live happening on Saturday the 27th of August at Church Every Day in Northridge, California. I'm going to be joined by Ryan Bell and Sean McDowell. I'll be giving you more details of that a little bit later on in today's show. Next week on the programme, I'm going to be joined by Gary and Michael again for a second bite of the cherry. We're going to be discussing whether Hume demolished miracles. The miraculous is our subject on next week's programme. So I hope you can come back for that as well. And of course, we'll be hearing some of your feedback towards the end of today's show. Quite a bit of feedback to last week's show where Richard Morgan, our Christian and atheist guest, Francis Janusz, talked about evidence, apologetics and relationships. So we'll be hearing what you had to say about all of that stuff as well. And don't forget that a little later on today, The Profile is here between 4 and 5. Today you'll be hearing from the Most Honourable PJ Patterson, former Jamaican politician who served as the 6th Prime Minister of Jamaica. That's between 4 and 5 this afternoon.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
So concluding today's programme, we've been having a fascinating discussion, the first of two discussions between my guests joining me today. Gary Habermas, here in my studio, is Professor of Apologetics and Philosophy at Liberty University, Virginia, who was a speaker at this year's Unbelievable, the conference. One of his specialities, of course, is the resurrection, but he talks on all kinds of other things like the Shroud of Turin and all kinds of interesting things. You could probably have a great conversation with him about Michael at some point. But we're going to continue the conversation next week. Michael Roos, our other guest, is our atheist today, philosopher of science and professor at Florida State University. His next book is called Darwinism as Religion, hoping to bring Michael back to talk about that when that's released later in the year. But we're talking today, at least on the programme, on is atheist naturalism coherent? And we will be talking next week about miracles a bit, as well as asking whether Hume did away with them. Just in that last section, we were chatting, you know, again about some of these issues that you think are a real problem, a real stumbling block for thoroughgoing naturalism, Gary. Issues around free will, meaning, ethics, personhood and consciousness was kind of where we got to. And Michael saying, yeah, he sees that as an issue where it's very difficult to conceive of how purely material naturalistic processes give rise to thinking and personhood and all the rest of it. But he's not prepared to say God did it either. Now, you're not at this point making the case for God here, are you?
No. I would never argue from free will, nature of persons, subjective states are not physical, notion of our beliefs, to therefore God. No, I would prefer to make a positive case for God from positive evidences, and maybe we'll, you know, hopefully get into that when we discuss David Hume. But I would just looking at those issues as issues with the coherence of naturalism, and I would give a list of things like it's very hard for me to think of how naturalism is established positively. Number two, how they would even get to the notion of God not existing when there's many independent. I mean, there's other paths. Somebody could be a deist. Somebody could be an agnostic. Somebody could be another religion. I also mentioned that list that you just said there. Free will. What do we do with objective morality? The nature of persons. I think it is a hard one. I mean, I share that with Michael. I think the fact that thinking that subjective states are due to physical causation is a very difficult problem for naturalism, and the notion of our beliefs to start with. So anyway, yeah, I don't think God follows from any of those. There are people who say God will follow from morality, but I was both basically trying to raise those as issues for the coherence of atheism. That's all.
Okay, and do you feel like Gary's made any headway with you, Michael, in terms of your commitment to naturalism, that he just thinks that it's a very hard position to sustain in light of all of these issues that he says there are?
Now, the question, Justin, is do I get my £10,000 honorarium?
Not on this occasion, Michael, though I might be able to scrape together a ham sandwich as I did for Gary earlier.
You're going to send him a ham sandwich in the mail?
maybe, if he really does a good job.
The thing that's going to really set up is Gary's only getting 5,000.
I got a half a ham sandwich.
Anyway, we are going to have a chance to mull this over a bit more in next week's programme. But just as we draw to the end of this one, at least, Michael, has Gary made any inroads today? You're willing to concede, I think, that it's, you know, there are areas of deep mystery, but you're just not willing to say that in any way takes you to God, though I think Gary's agreeing with you on that.
That's fair enough. I certainly think... That he's made help, you know, to for your listeners, anyhow. I mean, if you read what I've written, it's no surprises at all. But I think perhaps your listeners will have a better understanding of where I come from, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's been a great interaction on the programme today. Gary, many people are either atheist or Christian or agnostic listening to this programme may be wondering, well, that's interesting. I've heard Gary, you know, making the case against naturalism, which is is a position that many people do seem to hold, but perhaps haven't thought through all of the implications of it necessarily. I mean, Richard Dawkins, for instance, famously said the universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is at bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. Now, Dawkins, as far as I can see, is a naturalist. And in a sense, his worldview then sort of sees the universe in that way. But for you, presumably, you just don't see the universe the same way that Dawkins does there in that quote.
No, and I think Michael's done a better job than Dawkins has done, I'll tell you that. In fact, he said that himself. His comments about Dawkins would follow along that line. I mean, there are degrees of atheism, just like there are degrees of Christianity. But yes, I find all kinds of incommensurate areas that I would see between reason, empiricism, and the atheistic or naturalistic, whatever we want to talk about, and either methodological or especially metaphysical naturalism. I see all kinds of issues, and I would just look at them as incoherencies. Now, there are levels of incoherencies. I think Dawkins is far worse off than Michael is in what Dawkins is pushing. But I still see those problems across the board.
We'll leave it there for this week, gentlemen. But we look forward to the conversation next week, where perhaps we will get into a bit more of the conversation about the positive case for God. That's We're going good. To be asking on next week's program: did Hume demolish miracles? David Hume, of course, well known as a philosopher, and most people would label him, I think, a skeptic atheist of his day. Perhaps not quite the Dawkins of his day, but who knows? Maybe the Dan Dennett or something. But either way, we'll be debating his case against miracles next week on the program. So I hope you can come back for that and join me and Gary Habermas and Michael Roos as we start to nail down on that one. For the moment, gentlemen, thank you both for being with me on the program this week.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
If you want to get in touch about anything you heard on today's show, can I encourage you to email me, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Look forward to receiving your emails about today's show. You can also, of course, leave comments underneath the latest edition of the programme. That's at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Look forward to hearing what you had to say there as well. You can get in touch, of course, via social media too, @unbelievablejb to follow me on Twitter, facebook.com/unbelievablejb to find me on Facebook. And those, of course, are good places to see what's happening on the programme, a sneak preview of what's coming up, and other interesting stuff that I post there from time to time. One of those things coming up, of course, is Unbelievable Live, happening on Saturday, the 27th of August, only a few weeks away now, at Church Every Day in Northridge, California. Yes, Unbelievable is going to be in America, and I'm really excited to be joined at this event by Ryan Bell, who's an atheist. He came on the show back in 2014 to talk about his journey away from God. He tried a year without God, having been a Christian believer, a pastor, in fact, in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. He's going to be representing the atheist side of Why I'm an Atheist. On the Why I'm a Christian side, Sean McDowell joins me. He was on the show just a few weeks ago debating the fate of the apostles. Well, Sean is a Christian apologist. And so with Ryan and Sean, we'll be looking at why one is an atheist, why one is a Christian, discussing faith, reason, and the search for truth. And you can be part of the live audience for that recording. Can you come along on Saturday, the 27th of August, if you live on the west coast of the USA? Doors open at 6:30 p.m. It's absolutely free to attend. You just need to register at the website. So do go along there to truthmattersministries.com, and you'll find the link to the show, to the Unbelievable Live recording. And you can be there with us in person on Saturday, the 27th of August, at Church Every Day in Northridge, California. Again, go to truthmattersministries.com and be part of Unbelievable Live in the USA. I'm really looking forward to my USA trip. I'm going to be doing lots of other interviews and stuff with people that I'm sure you'll hear about about on the show in due course. But that particular is going to be a highlight of the time I'm spending out in the USA this summer. You'll be continuing to hear Unbelievable, nonetheless, while I'm away. We'll be making sure there's plenty for you to listen to every week here on the programme. I mentioned last week some of the exciting stuff coming up over the next few weeks. Thanks to Andrew, who got in touch as well, to say he's a listener out on the West Coast, and he's just a few minutes actually away from Everyday Church, where the event's taking place, and he's really looking forward to attending. I look forward to meeting you, Andrew, and many other Unbelievable listeners who I know regularly listen to the podcast week in, week out. Let's talk about last week's programme. I was joined by Richard Morgan and Francis Janusz. Richard, a Christian who had something of an epiphany that led him to Christianity after having been an atheist for a long time. He's a good friend of Francis, who's a long-standing atheist, and they were debating whether there's any value to apologetics. Both of them think it's very limited in its use. Richard takes what he calls an apophatic view of faith, which is it's essentially something we experience rather than something we can be argued or reasoned into. In many ways, Francis probably agreeing to some extent, in as much as she's never felt there has been a good satisfactory evidence for Christian faith. Well, we had an interesting discussion on that. One thing that came up was Anthony Flew's conversion, which was, I said in the programme, essentially on the basis of an argument and evidence for the fine tuning of the universe for and so on. Art in, I think you're in New York, Art, if memory serves me correctly, says, in today's show, you asserted that Anthony Flew became a theist. My understanding is that he became a deist, as Christianity Today reported it in an article of April 4th, 2010, after his death. Flew was quick to assert that he was merely a deist and did not believe in a God of revelation. And quoting him, but it seems to me that the case for an Aristotelian God who has the characteristics of power and also intelligence is now much stronger than ever was before, he said. He couldn't accept Christianity, he said, due to the problem of evil. And you say, Art, there's a massive difference between theism and deism. It's somewhat like saying Justin became a Roman Catholic or at least a Quaker. To so blithely equate the two is misleading. You're not the first Christian apologist I've heard blur those lines when discussing Flew. It doesn't bolster your apologetic arguments to mislead, something you normally avoid. Now, finally, you mentioned that, Art, because, of course, on the programme we just heard there with Gary and Michael, that did come up as well. And I think Gary referred to Anthony Flew as a theist. Now, I guess it depends on how you parse out theist versus deist. Usually when people use the word theist, I tend to think that they're just talking about a bare belief in God, which kind of is the same as deism, I suppose, and they don't have any views of that God necessarily being the Christian God or the Muslim God or any other God who has been revealed in some way. But obviously you feel that there should be more of a distinction between theist, which presumably means an interventionist sort of a God, as opposed to deist, which I guess means a God who sets the universe going but stands back from thenceforth. Thanks for getting in touch. David Robertson got in touch about last week's programme. Now, David, of course, was part of the story of Richard Morgan's conversion. After Richard Morgan reached out to David, having seen the way he was being treated on the Richard Dawkins website, and having this moment of epiphany when David asked him what would convince him that God exists, and Richard said, well, certainly not evidence or argument, and suddenly the lights went on for Richard at that point, where he just had this experience where he really believed in God. David says, what a pleasant surprise to come back from holiday and hear my friend Richard Morgan on the latest Unbelievable. However, it was also a frustrating experience. That was one show I would have loved to have been on. I agree entirely with Richard that relationship is key and that in one sense, God is unknowable. But in both instances, Richard goes too far, and some more balance is needed. Firstly, as regards the apophatic approach, the negative theology that says we cannot say what God is because God is nothing, Richard contradicts himself. He stated that the minute we say that God is something, then he cannot be that something. Well, if that's true, then Richard's favourite biblical statement that God is love means that God is not love. Secondly, whilst relationship is key, that does not negate the need for truth, revelation, and reason. Indeed, Richard sought to communicate what he said through truth, revelation, and reason. Just being nice communicates nothing, and a relationship which is just based on people being nice to one another with no substance in truth would be a meaningless and somewhat pointless relationship. I suspect that Richard is reacting to a kind of Christian version of what Frances was stating, that she enjoyed the discussion because she found it interesting and mentally stimulating. In other words, apologetics is seen as some kind of spiritual debating society. I agree with Richard's critique of this, but think he goes too far. It's precisely because we love someone that we're prepared to reason, discuss, and provide evidence. Perhaps the idea of the Trinity might help Richard and others. God is love. That love is shown primarily between the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. The Spirit is the one who leads us into all truth. The truth is Jesus Christ, the Son of God, who so loved the world that he gave his Son. Apologetics is simply seeking to introduce people to Jesus, removing the obstacles that get in the way so that people might come to know him and be saved. Thank you very much, David. Some helpful comments there. In the comments section underneath that show from last week, up at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable, Michael was one of the many people commenting, and Richard Morgan himself also joining in, actually, and responding to a number of people who had points to make about the discussion. Michael says, Justin, if you read this, may I pull you up on one thing? You're usually a brilliantly neutral moderator, but in this show, towards the end, in the summing up section, you used what is very much a straw man that some Christian apologists use. You suggested, while discussing C.S. Lewis's conversion, that a universe without God was one without hope, justice, and morality. I'm very much in the Christian camp today, but I was a fully paid up atheist for 15 years and would never recognize that caricature of the atheist worldview as one being without hope, justice, or morality, or without any foundation for such things. If you want a naturalistic exploration of such things, then I would heartily recommend the book The Age of Empathy by the animal behaviorist Franz de Waal. He is an atheist, but not hostile to faith. He wants to work with people of faith to build a better world. He firstly, through animal observation and humane experiments, breaks down any notion that justice and empathy are purely human traits, and then goes on to explore their emergence in higher animals. But I would still say you have one of the finest, if not the finest, Christian discussion show on the radio or on the web. You constantly produce excellent food for the mind, and you link me to a talk by Franz de Waal. So thank you very much for that, Michael. I would say that I'm not saying that it's not possible that empathy, justice, morality do emerge among different creatures, have emerged among humans and so on in some evolutionary story. We go over this a lot, don't we, on the program, but that you can't ground any of those in an atheistic worldview in a way which requires one to follow those moral precepts and moral rules or whatever. I've just never found a satisfactory answer to that. I'm sure we'll be doing the issue of morality and so on again at some point in the future. But thank you for pulling me up there anyway, Michael. This one from Norman in the comments section say, I always appreciate the show's thoughtful and usually respectful debates, but the guests in this episode were apparently too friendly for Justin's liking. Justin seemed frustrated that neither of his guests felt compelled to convince the other of their viewpoint. It seems the unspoken dispute was really about Christian evangelism. Justin seemed baffled by his Christian guests' unwillingness to try to evangelize his atheist guest. Justin seemed to forget that not all Christians are evangelical. Some Christians believe in sharing their own journeys and letting God find non-believers without evangelical intervention. I appreciate that, much to Justin's frustration, Richard Morgan did not allow himself to be pressed into Justin's evangelical perspective. As for the topic of apologetics, I think the faulty straw man argument of Christian apologists often use on the show is that it's more often about addressing Christians' doubts rather than convincing non-believers. Well, I'm inclined to agree with you, Norman, that apologetics does both. It's aimed at non-Christians. It's also aimed at helping Christians who have questions or doubts or whatever to think through those issues. I hope I didn't appear to be trying to cajole Richard into being more evangelistic towards Francis. I guess I knew that his perspective would be one that would come across as odd to many typical Christian listeners of this show, and I wanted to make sure that I asked the kinds of questions that I imagine lots of people would be asking. But I appreciate you getting in touch. What I've also got here are some interesting comments that have come in regard to the issue of fine-tuning of the universe. Now, I played out the audio of a recent video I made on this subject. The video is titled How a Dice Can Show That God Exists, and it's essentially looking at the probabilities of our universe being just right to produce human life, and comparing that to rolling 70 sixes in a row is the analogy I use in the video. Well, here's Nigel, who says, I've just listened to your interesting essay about the fine-tuning of the universe in order for any life to exist and the extremely unlikely event that it could happen without a supernatural power or being. I've heard on many occasions theologians and philosophers citing this as proof the universe was created by a benevolent power, as science cannot yet explain or prove the mechanism by which it could occur. There are, of course, theories that have been put forward, the multiverse, perpetual universe, but nothing's yet been established or proven to answer this fundamental question. But this is an ongoing activity that scientists are tackling, and they're the first to say that they currently don't have the answer and may not be able to explain it in our lifetime. But in the meantime, it's a fascinating road of discovery. And with all due respect to people of any faith, I do find some responses somewhat troubling. Many are happy to believe in a creator and explain the process through their religious literature, as the scientists haven't yet come up with the answer. Well, as we know, religion is a man-made concept, and the literature produced written over a long period of many thousands of years ago by many people. How on earth can these writings explain the fundamental mechanisms within the universe, or indeed on our planet, and yet some literally believe blindly that they do? I do find your programme well balanced with the discussions and fundamental questions. Look forward to listening to people's views. Nigel, I would say in response to that, that I wasn't putting the fine-tuning argument out there as somehow being, if you look in the Bible, you'll find this supported there as well. Now, obviously, the Bible does affirm the idea of God being the creator of all things and the orderliness of that creation. But I think that, yes, aspects of religion are obviously man-made. But in Christianity, we believe there is a revelation of God in Jesus Christ, and we have access to that revelation through Scripture. But there's also this other revelation, I think, of God, which is in nature, what is often called natural theology. And that fine-tuning, the argument from fine-tuning, is an example of where we look at nature and say, that also points towards God. And no, you're not going to find the equations for the fine-tuning of the universe in the Bible, obviously. But it's as though, you know, as commonly said, God has two books of revelation. One is in Scripture and one is in nature. And both point towards him. But thank you for that suggestion. And I've also got an email on this subject from, and I'm going to try and pronounce this correctly, from, it's a listener from Finland who's actually given me a guide to pronouncing his name, and I think it's Juho, I think is how it's meant to be, judging by the phonetics you gave me for pronouncing this. But Juho says, I'm an active listener of your brilliant podcast. Thank you. I watched the video, How a Dice Can Show That God Exists, that you mentioned on the podcast. I'm a mathematician myself, and I enjoy pondering the fine-tuning argument. I think the use of dice was a good idea, simple and concrete. But referring to the probability of us being here throughout the video was a bit off. It should be the probability of any life existing. You implied that without the fine-tuning of the cosmic expansion, the universe wouldn't be able to hold any kind of life, but a person without a prior knowledge of the argument could easily miss this. He could counter the argument by saying, well, if the universe had different constants, we would not be here, but there could well be a different kind of intelligent life in its thinking about the same question. These constants have more working options than you described, and I found those kinds of comments on the YouTube below the video. Otherwise, nice work. What an ending. I loved it. Thank you very much, Juho. I wrote a response to you. I'll just sort of quote a little bit from that as well, Juho. But I would say those who do say maybe another type of intelligent life could have been here. Well, I think the answer to that from the point of view of someone defending the fine-tuning is that without significant fine-tuning in the first place, there's no way for even the chemistry to get started that allows for the kind of building blocks that would be needed for any kind of carbon-based life to exist. And some people mistakenly seem to think I'm arguing for the unlikeliness of humanity specifically arising, but I'm not. It's just getting a universe in which some form of life, including us, is feasible in the first place is immensely improbable. And there are those who say, but, well, you know, what kind of life could exist? Maybe something completely different to carbon-based life might arise with a different set of initial conditions. I just find that fairly speculative. You know, we can't conceive of any life forms that don't correspond to chemistry as we know it. The most likely outcome of any other set of conditions is a sterile universe. It's either, you know, far too hot or too cold or too dense or too dispersed or some really for anything really to happen. But thank you very much for getting in touch about the programme and all those who have been in touch about different editions of the programme over the last few weeks. Looking forward to being with you again at the same time next week. Hope you can return as well for round two of Gary Habermas and Michael Roos.
You're unbelievable.
Well, as I said, we're going to be discussing whether Hume demolished miracles. The miraculous is our subject on next week's programme. Do join us again if you can. Until then, make sure you visit our website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Coming up next, next here on Premier Christian Radio, The Profile.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.